Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents Shadow Sun by John Sprunk. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Thomas Keegan, Karen Novak, Elizabeth Jernigan, Bruce Allen Rauscher, Joe Brack, James Konacek, Danny Gavigan, James Keegan, Alyssa Wilmoth, Mort Shelby, Yasmin Toison, Larissa Gallagher, Colleen Delaney, Alexander Strain, Gary Tells, David Coyne, Jeff Allen, Ted Stoddard, Patrick Bussink, Scott McCormick, Margie Tompros, Kimberly Gilbert, Joseph Thornhill, and Christopher Sheeran. The flower of northern Nemea, 200 lords and ladies, filled the great hall of Ostrogoth Keep. The centerpiece of the evening was an aged hillman, stripped to the waist and bound to a wooden frame. Livid welts oozing blood crisscrossed his shoulders and back. While Duke Reinhard's guests gorged on fine victuals, his torturer performed for their entertainment. At the same time, a killer stalked in the shadows. Hidden within the gloom shrouding the hall's lofty ceiling, he crept across the rafters to the flicker of the torch fires below. As unseen as the wind, silent as death itself. The amused Duke spilled wine down his ermine-lined robes and spoiled the yellow dress of the pale, shuddering girl on his lap. Kane's gloved hands curled into fists. It was time to go to work. He dropped down to an empty balcony outthrust from the stone wall. Crouched behind the railing, he unslung a satchel from his shoulder and took out its contents. With sure movements, he assembled a powerful bow made from two curved shafts of laminated horn. He opened a lacquered case and took out three arrows. Each projectile ended in brilliant indigo fletching, the design favored by the hill tribes of eastern Ostrogoth, as requested by the client. Kane fit an arrow to the string and lifted the bow. He sighted along the shaft. An uneasy sensation rumbled in the pit of his stomach. Nerves. He adjusted his aim to allow for distance and declination. The girl in the yellow dress managed to escape the Duke's lewd embrace, at least for the moment.
Don't worry, honey. He won't ever bother you again.
Just as he was about to shoot, his target leaned over to chortle into the ear of a lovely noblewoman beside him. Kane held his breath and counted by the slow, measured rhythm of his pulse. Any moment now, the Duke would sit up and present the perfect target. A feathery tickle caressed Kane's shoulders. Not taking his eyes off the Duke, Kane caught a glimpse of silver.
Hello, lover.
Ghostly fingers tickled Kane's waist, but his gaze never left the target.
Hello, Kit.
Putting another notch in your belt, I see.
It didn't matter that no one else could hear her. She was throwing off his cadence.
I'm busy. Go find a nest of bunnies to play with until I'm done here.
Kit pressed her face against his cheek to peer down the arrow shaft. Although he couldn't exactly feel her, tiny itches radiated everywhere she touched his skin. A strand of her silver hair fell across his left eye. Kane resisted the urge to blow it away, knowing it wouldn't do any good.
Bunnies live in holes, not nests, and you're aiming too low.
Leave me alone. I've got this shot.
You're going to miss his neck by half a foot?
Kane ground his teeth as the Duke turned away from the noble woman. To slap the back of Lyrum Kornfelsch of the Kornfelsch Merchant Syndicate. The Syndicate was backing Duke Reiner to the hilt, hoping to ride his rise to power all the way to the inner sanctums of the capital.
I'm aiming for his heart. Now leave me alone for a minute.
Kit hopped up on the banister, balancing on her bare toes as light as a butterfly. Short for a human woman, she possessed a figure out of any man's fantasies. Tiny-waisted yet buxom, she had creamy skin with a faint olive sheen. The dress she wore, tight clinging with an absurdly short skirt, barely left anything to the imagination. Kame supposed it made no difference, since no one could see her but him.
What if he's wearing a coat of mail under that atrocious shirt?
The arrowhead is piled for penetration. Anyway, he doesn't wear armor. He detests the weight of it. That's why he surrounds himself with so many soldiers.
Kame rechecked his aim anyway. He wished the Duke would sit up straight. His fingers were getting numb. Kit spun around and sat on the narrow railing.
For all the good they'll do him. Are you going to finish this anytime soon?
Just a moment.
The Duke leaned back in his chair, his shoulders framed by the wide oaken back. Kame released the bowstring. The target glanced upward. Wine ran down Reinhardt's blubbery chins as their gazes met. It was a perfect shot, a sure kill. But just before it struck, the torchlight flickered. Kame's neck hairs tingled at the sight of Lyrum Kornfelsch, sprawled in front of the Duke. The arrow's blue feathers quivered above the emerald brooch nestled in the hollow of his throat. Guests bolted from their seats, all except for Kornfelsch, who they left lying across the high table like an overstuffed ham. The Duke's soldiers rushed to surround him. Kame grabbed the other arrows and fired in rapid succession. The first caught a bodyguard through the left eye. The second penetrated the boss of a soldier's shield and through the forearm holding it, but the Duke remained unscathed. Kame tossed the bow aside and raced down the balcony. Kit skipped along the railing beside him.
I told you the shot was off. You do have a contingency plan, right?
Kame clenched his jaws tight together. The only thing worse than making a grand mess of a job was doing it in front of Kit. Now he had to get down and dirty. He reached behind his back and drew a pair of suite knives. 18 inches of single-edged steel gleamed in the torchlight. A sentry appeared at the end of the catwalk. Kame flowed past him, close enough to smell the wine on the man's breath, and the sentry stumbled against the wall, a bloody gash across his throat. On the floor below, the Duke was ushered by his bodyguards through a door at the back of the hall. Kame vaulted over the railing, jumping right through Kit. For a moment, as their bodies merged, he was covered from head to foot by tingling goosebumps. As he landed on the central trestle, a thrown spear flashed just inches in front of his face. Wagons and dinnerware went flying as he dashed down the polished length of the table. Kit floated above his head.
He's getting away!
Then how about you go follow him?
She sped off. Kame kicked open the door. The Duke would be heading to his quarters on the top floor of the dungeon, where he could hold up until reinforcements arrived. If that happened, Kame was well and truly screwed. But he had never failed to complete an assignment before. He didn't plan to start now. The corridor beyond was unlit. He started inside, but a nagging sense of caution made him pause. That hesitation saved his life, as a sword blade swept through the empty space where his neck would have been. Kame ducked and jabbed with both knives. His left-hand suit cut through a colorful surcoat and got caught in the links of the hidden guardsman's mail underneath. But the right-hand blade found a gap in the armor. Kame jerked his knives free and swept down the hallway. A single staircase led to the higher levels. The steps spiraled clockwise around a thick stone newel post. As he came around the first landing, a quarrel zipped past. Kame threw himself against the wall. From somewhere above, he could hear the sound of a hand crank rearming the crossbow. Kame darted up the steps as fast as his legs would propel him. If there was a second archer lying in wait, he would be dead before he knew it. Fortunately, a lone crossbowman stood on the landing above. The soldier dropped the crossbow and grabbed for his sword, but Kame cut him down before he freed the weapon. Kame crept up the last flight of stairs to the keep's highest level. The upper landing was empty. Candles dripping wax from brass sconces on the wall illuminated a juncture of two hallways. He put his back to the cool stone and peered around the corner into the corridor that led to the master suite. So far, the Duke had shown an exceptional affinity for sacrificing his men to preserve his own hide. Two bodyguards were down, two more to go. decent odds. Kame settled down the hallway. The door to Reinhard's suite was reinforced with thick iron bands. It would be barred from the inside. Nothing short of an axe would get through the door, but he had another idea. Kame was moving toward a shuttered window on the side of the hallway when Kit's head and one shapely shoulder poked through the door.
You'd better hurry. He's packing up to run.
A cool breeze ruffled Kame's hood as he swung open the shutters. A 60-foot drop yawned on the other side.
He doesn't have anywhere to go.
Not quite. There's a hidden passage that leads outside the grounds.
Damn it! Why didn't you mention that earlier?
How was I supposed to know it was there? It's pretty well hidden, behind a wardrobe case.
Kame swung a leg over the sill. Time was running out. If the Duke got outside the compound, he would be near impossible to catch.
Keep watching that secret tunnel, kid. Follow Reinhard if he makes it outside. I'll catch up.
Will do.
She vanished back inside the chamber. Kame still didn't know what had gone wrong in the Great Hall. The shot had been set up perfectly. Nothing he could do about it now except to correct his mistake and get out fast. As he climbed out onto the sill, he spotted the outline of another window on the same level, 30 paces away. Pale light flickered from within. Exit scenarios played through Kame's mind as he ran his fingers over the outer wall. Once the job was finished, he could drop down to the Keep's courtyard to make his escape, or he could use the Duke's secret tunnel. Either plan held its own set of risks. He had hoped to be gone by now. Every passing minute reduced his chances for success. The broad ashlar blocks of the Keep's outer shell provided strong protection against siege weapons, but their wide seams made good purchase for climbing. Without stopping to consider the prudence of his actions, he found a crevice in the wall and grabbed hold. He hated rushing a job, but he was running out of options at this point. He focused on his holds. As he reached a point halfway between the windows, a prickling itched down his spine. He froze, clinging to the sheer stone face. Something drew his gaze toward the heavens. A thick blanket of clouds veiled the night sky. The light of torches from the courtyard below flickered upon the Keep's crenellations. He saw nothing at first. Then, something moved among the battlements. Kame held his breath as a silhouette passed above him, a sinuous shape gliding through the dark. For one terrible moment, he thought it had seen him, but then it was gone. Kame waited several heartbeats before he dared to breathe again. What was going on? He didn't have time to waste. He tried to put the specter out of his mind. Seconds later, he was at the window. The clear glass casement didn't open silently, but no one inside noticed. The window led into the master bedchamber. Beyond it, Kame could see entrances to other rooms and the stout door leading to the hallway he had vacated minutes before. Both bodyguards stood at the barred door, swords out, watching the portal as if expecting Kame to burst through at any moment. The Duke hunched over a heavy trunk.
Othan! Leave off that damn door and help me!
One of the bodyguards turned around as Kame crawled through the window. The guard opened his mouth to shout a warning, but never got the chance. The smooth handle of Kame's suit protruded from his throat.
What?
Oh! Kame drew his other knife and crossed the room just as the second bodyguard turned. As the man raised his sword arm to strike, Kame lunged in close and drove his weapon full length into the joint under the man's armpit.
Kame, look out!
Kit's shout made Kame turn, knees bent, with his knife at the ready. From this vantage, he could see the wardrobe Kit had mentioned. It was pulled aside, and a black tunnel mouth yawned in the wall beyond. A young man in the Duke's livery, with fair hair and a short goatee, emerged, with a bared arming sword in his hand. Kame pivoted out of the path of the falling sword, and thrust his knife into his opponent's side. The Duke cringed beside a massive four-post bed.
Please, I'll give you anything you want.
Yes, you will.
Kame left the body stretched out on the bed, with a hole carved into the bloody chest. He hadn't been able to take out Reinhard in front of his dinner guests. Kame's clients would have to be satisfied with butchery. The message was sent. He didn't expect the Duke's men to trail him for long. With their liege dead, they would be more concerned with finding and protecting Reinhard's heir. By all accounts, young Lord Robert was a decent boy, a far cry from his monstrous father. The duchy would be a better place. Kame's gaze fell on the young man sprawled at the tunnel entrance. He had never set eyes on Lord Robert, but he had a reliable description. 22 years old, light brown hair with a wisp of a beard, and blue eyes.
Oh, hell's breath.
The youth on the floor matched the description too closely to be a coincidence. So much for leaving these lands in the care of a kinder, more tolerant liege.
You're going to get some company very soon.
Kim considered the open window.
How many?
More than you can handle, believe me.
I do. What about outside?
All those pretty ladies and gentlemen have stirred up quite a commotion in the yard. Every exit is sealed, and extra men have been put on the walls. Search parties are scouring the grounds.
In the tunnel?
Lots of stairs, and the rest of the Duke's bodyguards wait at the other end. They might not be happy to see you come out before their boss.
Nothing was going his way tonight. He was going to have to use his last option. By the amused expression on her face, Kit knew it too. He hated admitting she was right, but he'd probably hate dying even more. He went around the room snuffing candles and lamp wicks to plunge the chamber into darkness, except for a single lantern resting beside the tunnel mouth. He ignored the Duke's traveling trunk and the sacks spilled on the floor. Just one of those purses would set him up for a year, but he was an assassin, not a thief.
You better hurry.
Kim tried to ignore her as he pressed his back against a wall in the darkest part of the room. There, amid the shadows, he closed his eyes and shut out the outside world. He focused on the sliver of fear quivering at the center of his core. Fear was the key. It was always there, hidden beneath layers of denial and repression. Kim hated this. He had to tap into that feeling, allow it to possess him. At first, he didn't think he could. There were too many distractions. The pain was too far removed. But then, a memory seized hold of him. It was an old memory, full of pain. Raging flames painted the night sky in hues of orange and gold and threw shadows across the yard of the villa where the tall body sprawled. There was blood everywhere, pooled in the gravel, splattered across the face of the man kneeling in the center of the yard, running down his chest in a great black river.
Father.
Kim opened his eyes as the dark came alive. It gathered around him like a cloak. By the time the guards battered down the door, he was hidden within its inky folds. Just another shadow.
Prophet's blood.
It's the Duke.
The soldiers flitted about like bees from a jostled hive. None of them detected the shade that glided out the door and down the stairs. A quarter mile away from the stronghold, Kim released the cloying darkness. He grabbed the trunk of a sapling to hold himself upright as a wave of disorientation overloaded his senses. The darkness swam before his eyes in a thousand shades of gray and black. Something lurked in the distance, just beyond the limit of his vision. He didn't know how he summoned the shadows. The power had been with him for as long as he could remember, lurking within him, threatening to erupt whenever he was frightened or angry. He had learned to control those feelings over the years, but he never got used to it. After a minute, the weakness passed, and the normality of the night returned. Kim resumed his trek through the fog-strewn moor. Overhead, a lone star pierced the cloud cover. Like a man grasping a lifeline, he stumbled toward it, following its shimmer through the gloom. Josephine rushed from the carriage and into the house, faster than the footmen burdened with their purchases could follow. Her cheeks stung from the brisk autumn chill. As she brushed past Fenric, their family steward, he collected her outer garments with his usual aplomb.
Welcome home, mistress. I trust your excursion was pleasant.
Marvelous. His father upstairs. I must see him right away. I have such amazing news. Anastasia is to be married this Yetide day, and to such a dashing man. His name escapes me at the moment, but he's very tall and handsome.
Her father would be ensconced in his study with his books and papers. Retired from his government post for 4 years, he still maintained his connections in political circles, a thing for which she was especially grateful. Someday those connections would net her a smart match, like Anastasia had just made.
Did I mention Anastasia's betrothed was an officer in the Sacred Brotherhood?
No, mistress.
Fenric?
An unfamiliar overcoat hung from the brass rack on the wall.
Who visits with my father?
A man from the palace, milady.
From the palace?
She raced up the wide marble steps.
He does not wish to be disturbed.
Of course her father would want to see her straight away. A visitor from the palace could only mean one thing. Her father was finally making a match for her hand, and to a man from an outstanding family. Her heart was ready to burst from her chest. Just to think, she and Anastasia could both be married by this time next year. Josie paused for a moment at the door. She couldn't remember it ever being closed. She glanced down the hall. The chambermaid was gone. On an impulse, she pressed her ear against the wooden panels. The voices of two men murmured on the other side. A tendril of guilt knotted in her belly, but she didn't pull away. If this visitor was here to discuss her matrimonial options, it concerned her more than anyone. But she couldn't make out what was being said.
I wish they would speak up. Oh!
She jumped back as the door opened. She smoothed the front of her dress and did her best to look as if she had just arrived. The guest was a tall gentleman, younger than she imagined. A sigil of crossed keys was emblazoned on the breast of his gray mantle, which he wore over a suit of the same color.
Miss?
The man bent in a stiff bow before striding past her to the stairs. Josie was bursting with questions as she peeked inside. Her father sat at his perennially cluttered desk with a hand pressed to his forehead. The light from an open window illuminated his pate, bald save for a halo of sparse white hair around the crown. He would be 62 this winter. She remembered how strong and tall he had looked when she was a child. Now he spent most of his time in the study, surrounded by the trappings of his former power. The room was stuffy and warm, but he kept a blanket wrapped around his legs.
Josie, I didn't hear you return. How was your shopping? Did you find Anastasia well? I want to hear everything.
Father?
She sat in the leather chair beside his desk.
Who is that man? Fenric said he came from the palace.
He reached out to take her hand. His fingers were thin and cold.
His father was a friend of mine. In younger days, the two of us were powerful men. Members of the court vied for our attention and would give much for our patronage. But now he is dead and buried, and I am an old man.
You are still a great man. I just had this notion your visitor was calling about something more auspicious.
Oh, you thought he came with a betrothal offer?
It was silly of me. I'm only 17, I know.
17 and lovely as a rose in bloom. I wish I had such an offer, Josie. Sadly, the news is not so gay. There are rumors of strange troubles in the north, banditry and worse. Envoys have gone missing, and things are deteriorating here in Otha. How would a voyage suit you?
A voyage? Father, I can't leave Otha. Anastasia is to be married. That's what I've come to tell you. She's asked me to be her maiden of honor.
I am quite serious, Josephine. The political tide is shifting faster than I anticipated. I had hoped we could weather the storm, but I fear it is not safe anymore.
Not safe? Why not?
Suddenly, the Earl looked very old and feeble.
Affairs on the capital line are in disarray.
Her father still used old-fashioned terms like the capital line, even though the Nemean Empire had died out ages ago, and everyone else had taken to calling it Celestial Hill.
There is unrest in the streets, and the prelate's ability to contain it grows weaker. Just the other day, a man was killed not 3 blocks from our doorstep. Suffice it to say, I wish you to adjourn to a safer location until these problems pass.
I was out the whole afternoon and didn't see anything amiss. The city is as calm as a summer day. Anyway, Anastasia is my best friend. I can't miss her wedding, Father, not for anything.
Josie, my dear, I promised your mother I would always see to your well-being. And I act for my own selfish desires. I couldn't bear to see you come to harm. You possess the key to my heart.
She placed a hand on her bosom. Under the lace fronting of her dress, the cool hardness of a pendant pressed against her skin. She knelt before her father and folded her hands on his lap.
Mother wasn't afraid of anything. She wouldn't want me to leave your side.
He brushed a rogue curl from her face.
She would want you to trust my judgment and obey my wishes. Please, Josie, pack your things. I have arranged for a ship.
Father! father, please.
No, Josie. My mind is adamant on this. You would go to Navarre and remain there until I send for you. The new Exarch is a good man and as trustworthy as we'll find in times such as these. He will see you safe.
I won't go! You cannot make me!
It is settled. Chide me no more on this subject, daughter.
Cheeks wet with tears, she dashed from the study.
Oh, my.
Brushing past Fenric in the hallway, loaded with wrapped bundles from the carriage. In her room, she stood at the foot of the feather bed, her hands clenched at her sides. How could he be so cruel? Why couldn't he see that she couldn't leave? They needed each other. She had no other family, only him. And now he was sending her away. What would she tell Anastasia? Josie composed herself. Tears wouldn't get her anywhere. She sat down at her dressing table and began to brush her hair. She needed to think, to devise some argument to sway her father. She had to convince him to let her stay. She had to. Raging flames painted the night sky in hues of orange and gold, and threw shadows across the yard of the villa, where the tall body sprawled. Kane peered through the wooden slats of the fence.
Kane, we have to go.
Kane wanted to turn away, but his limbs had turned to stone. There was blood on his hands. He wiped them on his shirt, but they wouldn't come clean. The world shimmered, and he was standing in the yard. A large man slumped at his feet. Strings of red-black blood ran from the wound in his chest. A tremor ran through Kane as the corpse opened its eyes, black spheres without irises or whites.
Justice, my son.
Kane opened his eyes and was greeted by a razor-sharp moonbeam that pierced through the slats of the window shutters. A cool breeze flitted over his chest as the last vestiges of the dream, the images of fire and death, sifted through his mental grasp. He settled back into the fabric of the cot under him and stared at the ceiling, debating whether to get up or try to fall back asleep for another hour. He threw back the woolen blankets and dropped to his chest on the cold floorboards. His muscles stretched and contracted through a routine of exercises. 30 minutes later, he was sweating freely. After splashing his face with water from a chipped clay pitcher, he stood before his only extravagance, a full-length cheval glass and a bronze stand. Hard eyes stared back at him from the wavy depths of the mirror. Chips of granite set in deep cavities beneath his thick black brows. He ran his hands across his torso, examining the damage. A few scrapes and cuts, broken skin at his elbows and the backs of his hands, but all in all, he was in better shape than he probably deserved. Fragments of the dream scudded through his mind. The words of his father's ghost haunted him.
Justice.
Had it been served in Ostergoth? He pulled a clean chitin and breeches from his footlocker and dressed. The rest of his apartment lacked for furniture. A plain table stood with a single chair, a cold box, and a small brick oven in the kitchen, and a pantry. The living area was bare, except for a wide mat and assorted pieces of exercise equipment, sand-filled bags suspended from the ceiling. As he put on a pair of scuffed leather boots, he wondered where Kit was. Kit came and went as she pleased. Sometimes he wouldn't see her for days, and other times he couldn't get rid of her. He didn't know what Kit was, not exactly. When he was a boy, he had thought of her as an imaginary friend, but as he grew older and she didn't leave, he began to suspect something else. No one else had invisible friends who tagged after them, but she was real. She knew things he didn't, things he couldn't know. Countless times she'd warned him of danger before it materialized. His ability to meld with the shadows was another mystery. He had always been good at going about unnoticed, even as a boy, but where did the power come from? Had he been born with it, or was he cursed? More trouble than anything, it was another quirk of a past he remembered, only in murky fragments. Maybe he didn't want to. Kane strapped on his knives and covered them with a fustian cloak as he went to the door, its olive-green paint peeling away in strips to reveal the slab of old wormwood underneath. He peered down the hallway in both directions, then headed for the battered old stairs to the foyer. The tenement building might have been a stately manor house in its former days, before the neighborhood took a turn for the worse. Still, he liked its location, and found the current owner's policy of studied indifference toward his tenants convenient. As long as the rent was paid on time, the old geezer never asked questions. As Kane reached the street, a stench assaulted him like a wet sock full of rotten eggs, a combination of sea air and human refuse that clogged his head and clung to the back of his palate. It was worse in the summer. The ancient stone buildings of Lowtown, once the heart of the city according to the local salts, were stained with centuries of weather, soot, and foul air. Over the years, the inner city had grown upward as well as outward. Buildings 4 and 5 stories tall hung precariously over the narrow streets. With the defeat of the Pirates of the Stormcatcher Islands 50 or so years back, and the subsequent expansion of trade on the Midland Sea, those with the means to capitalize on the sudden influx of new goods left the neighborhood to build bigger homes on the hills above the processional. And so, Hightown was born, eventually to become the glowing jewel of Ophir. Things had only gotten worse for the Lowtowners in recent years, such as increased taxes to pay for distant wars and expensive public works like the new cathedral under construction in the city center, and food shortages. The poorest families were put out on the street by landlords feeling the pinch. He saw them every day, begging on the main thoroughfares, selling their children in back alleys. Kane caught a glimpse of the horned moon perched over the roof of an abandoned dyer's factory like a silver sickle. Its otherworldly beauty, forever out of reach, always made him uneasy in a way he couldn't rightly describe. It was like being homesick, but for a home he had never known. Ophir had been his home for 6 years. He had originally begun plying his trade as a sellsword in the Western Territories. He'd done time in various mercenary crews during his teen years, earning his silver with one hand and spending it with the other. But after a bit of nasty business in Isenmere, his gang was run out by a posse bent on revenge. He drifted from town to town, always watching over his shoulder. When no lawman showed up to arrest him, he passed into a new life. A right turn onto Serpentine Way brought Kane to a tangle of back streets and alleyways known as the Gutters. Here the buildings were built of old crumbling brick, covered in dingy whitewash. The Gutters were home to every sort of crook and deadbeat imaginable. It was a place to tread lightly, where anything could happen, and often did. Kane strode down the center of the street. Footpads slunk deeper into their hidey holes as he passed by. Muggers found business elsewhere. He'd drenched these cobblestones in blood more than once. Still, he kept his cloak tight around his shoulders and one hand on a knife. His first contract had been right here in Ophir. Delros was a luxuries trader whose business had suffered a turn of bad fortune. When he couldn't cover his debts to the local usurers, they decided to make an example of him. Kane was tapped for the job. It was a simple break and stab, nothing fancy, but Kane would never forget the shakes he'd suffered that spring night as he scaled the low wall surrounding Dalros's home. He was in and out in less than 15 minutes. With the merchant's blood on his hands, he'd crept past a lounging sentry, slipped back over the wall, and gone on his way. He was paid 20 gold soldats for that job, a fortune to him in those days.
You there! Stand aside!
Kane spun around, his knife slid out of its sheath as a squadron of soldiers on horseback rode down the street. On their blood-red breastplates gleamed a blazing sunburst in gold, the symbol of the Sacred Brotherhood, or the Knights of the Noose, as they were called behind their backs, a jest about the manner in which their patron saint had gone to meet his maker. Some in Ophir said they were the real power behind the prelacy, but Kane paid little heed to politics. It made no difference to him who ruled, as long as he could count on them to sow discord and corruption. Unrest made for good business in his line of work, and over the past few years, business had been extraordinarily good. He slipped into the shadow doorway of a cobbler shop and sheathed his blade as they rode past. Once the soldiers passed from sight, he continued on his way past Chiron Square. A marketplace by day, it brokered a more illicit type of commerce after sundown. He turned onto Cutter Lane. Despite the chill in the air, windows were thrown wide open down the length of the street, spilling the rosy light of a dozen taverns and fest houses onto the grimy cobblestones. The cracked placard over the door of the third house on the left depicted three buxom ladies in short frocks. Bright light filled the wine house known as the Three Maids. Kame threaded his way to the bar. Big Olaf was tending tonight. He grinned through a row of uneven teeth.
Hey, boyo! You should have been here last night. I had to toss out a pair of uptown rakes with a mean on. Swear they flew a dozen paces before they hit the pavement. Each!
Kame slid a silver noble, double pennyweight, across the bar.
Is he in?
The coin disappeared, and Olaf jerked his sausage-thick thumb at the back stairs. Kame headed around the bar. Matthias, the owner of the Three Maids, also handled several of the biggest fish in Othar's murder-for-hire game. He was their broker, their middleman, the one who ferreted out the contracts and matched them with the right talent for the job. He lived above the tavern he claimed to be closer to the people, and always acted hurt when anyone insinuated he was a miser. Kame didn't know why Matthias continued to live amid the dregs of the city. With the commissions he'd made in the last year alone, he could afford a comfortable house in Hightown. Some folks couldn't bear to leave their roots, no matter how high they climbed. Kame had never had that problem. The back stairs were unlit. As he started up, a shape appeared above him. An image flashed through his mind. Clinging to the walls of Duke Reinhard's keep, gazing up at a mysterious black figure crawling along the battlements. Both Sweet knives were out in an instant, held low and pressed against his thighs to hide their shine. Two white circles appeared in the gloom above him, a pair of hands held open.
Peace. Good evening, Kame.
Well?
Kame slipped the knives back into their homes, but he left an inch of each blade free.
If you got business with Matthias, I'll wait below.
Rao descended a step. The faint glow from the common room highlighted his features. Bright blue eyes peered from beneath coiffed spikes of stark blonde hair. Dressed all in black leather, he melded with the shadows of the stairway. The intricate silver crossguard of a cut-and-thrust sword jutted from his belt. Glints of steel at his wrists, waist, and boots hinted at other weapons. Rao was notorious for all the hardware he carried.
No, we are concluded. I heard you did quite well up north. Reinhard and his bodyguard slain in front of 100 witnesses, but not a single person could identify the killer afterward. Not bad.
Kame didn't like discussing his business, especially where idle ears could overhear. He leaned against the wall of the stairwell, trying to appear casual.
It's done. That's all that matters.
Exactly. But you should be careful. There's been a citywide crackdown these past couple days.
I saw the display in the square.
A gang of roof crawlers got pinched robbing a vicar's home. All involved were caught and hanged, but not before they tortured his entire family for the location of a cache of jewels. Word says they even cut off the youngest boy's fingers and toes.
A leader of the true faith, supposedly sworn to vows of poverty and chastity, keeps a wife in Hightown with a wife and children, and no one cares to comment. But why should they? Large sins are easily forgotten. It's the little ones that gnaw at your soul in the lonely hours of the night.
Of course, the fops up on Celestial Hill are terrified out of their wigs that it's another movement toward rebellion.
Kame nodded, uncomfortably reminded of young Lord Robert.
If you'll excuse me, I have business of my own with Matthias.
I've no time for palaver myself. I'm heading out of town.
They passed each other on the stairs, and Rao turned.
You know, Kame, it's not fair.
What isn't?
Here we are. Two of the deadliest men in the city. We should be running things, lording it up in the palace. It's all wasted on those powdered fools whose only claim is their family name.
Kame looked down at the other man without a shred of empathy. According to the rumors, Rao was a son of privilege who had enjoyed many a night rotting in Lowtown until his inheritance ran out. Then, broken desperate, he had weaseled his way into the assassination trade. He must have found the taste to his liking, because he came back again and again between benders on Silk Street. Knifings in the merchant district in broad daylight, pregnant mistresses found floating in the harbor, those were Rao's stock in trade.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, farewell, Kame. I'm off to a warmer clime to take care of some business. We'll talk another time.
Not if Kame had any choice in the matter. He just wanted to get his money and go home. The secret not given, Kame opened the only door in the hall without waiting for an invitation. If Matthias acted the skinflint with his patrons below, He spared no expense to make his living space look and feel like a mansion. Overlapping hand-woven carpets covered the floors. Silken arrays embroidered with Eastern-style hunting scenes decorated the walls, hiding the bare panels underneath. Heavy furniture and glossy hardwoods cluttered the room, along with marble tables and expensive bronze artwork. Matthias came through the archway on the far side of the parlor, dressed in a gaudy teal robe splashed with tiny golden cranes. He was a heavyset man past his middling years. He still had most of his hair and employed dyes to keep it black and lustrous, except for a pair of silver wings brushed back over his ears. An admission of inevitability, he called them.
Our good friend returns from the north.
They shook hands, and Matthias offered him a choice of seats. Kame sat down on a high-backed chair with no armrests or cushion. Matthias fetched a bottle and two glasses from a malachite sideboard.
Ah, by the gods above and below, I'm glad to see you back.
Blasphemy, Matt. At your age.
Aye, I'm too old to care any more what the church thinks. What has that prattle ever done for anyone? Nothing. Ah, but forget about that. Everything went well, yes?
Kame accepted a glass of amber brandy and settled back into the hard seat.
Well enough, although trying to get anywhere in this country is becoming a right pain in the arse. The roads are a mess, and toll houses have sprung up over every hill.
Yeah.
Matthias flumped onto a banquette and sloshed liquor on his expensive robe.
Yeah, the realm is coming apart like an overripe melon. Every warlord who can put together a dozen half-trained men-at-arms are trying to carve out a piece for himself. It's almost enough to make one long for the good old days of Imperial law and order. Almost.
Anyway, I stayed in Ostagoth long enough to hear the bells ring his grace's departure from the world of the living before I left.
To another job completed, and another villain vanquished.
I've gathered there was some trouble in town while I was away.
Oh, I had nothing to do with it.
The rubies encrusting Matt's pinky ring gleamed as he placed a plump hand over his flabby breast.
You know I never touch that sort of smash-and-grab work. It's an unsavory business, and a trifle pathetic. Now we all have to suffer through a few weeks of heightened security, but things will settle down. I can't stay on full alert forever, eh? More brandy?
Well, I'll just have my fee and leave you in peace.
No. That's the man I know. All business. And business is good.
He reached under his seat.
500 soldats, just as the contract stated.
And tossed a bulging leather sack to Kame. Kame caught the bag and slipped it into his shirt.
Not going to count it.
No need to. I know where you live.
Right enough. You're acquiring quite a reputation, Kame. That's why I know you're just the man for another job I'm sitting on.
No, thank you, Matt. I don't want to see anything you're sitting on.
It's not like you to pass up money, especially for a worthy cause.
I'm sure. Another priest with a fetish for children or a landlord who squeezes every last crumb from his destitute peasants. No, thanks. I'm going to take some time off. Like you said, the city's heating up.
Oh, that's why I'm turning to you, Kame. Believe me when I say this job is easy. So easy you could do it blind and one-handed.
Not an image I want to ponder.
No, you know what I mean. But it has to be done fast.
Kame headed for the door.
Sorry, Matt.
Kame! I'm desperate!
Kame stopped, with his hand on the knob. Matthias wasn't a stranger to theatrics, but he sounded genuinely worried. And Matthias Phineas never worried.
What's the job?
Please sit, my friend. More brandy?
No more drinks. Tell me about the job.
Oh, it's very simple. One target living in Hightown.
Kame's hand hovered over his glass, resting still on the table.
Inside the city?
Yes, you've done local work before.
Who is he?
A retired general. A real hard case, from what I've heard. He was responsible for some big massacre during the war. Up in Aragoth, I believe. You're from those parts, aren't you?
What makes you say that?
Nothing much. You just have a northernish look about you.
Kame looked Matthias in the eye.
I told you before, I'm from the Western Territories.
But he wasn't. As far as he could piece together from his shambled memories, his family had hailed from Aragoth, one of several border states that had once been part of the Nemean Empire. But it was a past that he didn't want known, for no better reason than it was personal.
Oh, yes. I forgot.
Go on.
Well, what makes me nervous is the timing. This job has to be done in 2 days.
Impossible. You know I don't do rush jobs. Go find some desperate sailor deep in his cups and slip him a few silvers.
Team, this client isn't someone to disappoint, if you get my meaning. It must be done quickly and with no mistakes. That's why I need you. You're the only one I can trust with a job like this on such short notice.
I want to help you, Matthias, but there are too many things to consider. I spent weeks stalking Reinhardt before I took him down. I would need time to study the target, learn his habits and his movements. After that, I would have to do the same thing for his family and his bodyguards.
Matthias waddled to a roll-top desk against the wall. He held up a bundle of papers bound together with a red cord.
I have all the particulars here. Daily itinerary, personal security details, interior layouts, everything you'll need. He lives with a young daughter, but don't worry about her. The mother's dead. He doesn't keep any guards, just a broken-down manservant who sleeps like a log. It will be the easiest money you ever made.
Matthias held out the bundle, but Kane didn't take it.
Who gathered all this?
A mutual friend. I vouch for its authenticity.
It was Rao, wasn't it?
Why does it matter? Just take it.
Damn it, Matt. He took the assignment and then dumped it back in your lap when a better job came up, didn't he? No wonder he was so chummy. No thanks, I'm passing.
Matthias reached out as if to grab his sleeve, but drew his hand back before it made contact. Kane stopped as the bundle of papers was thrust in front of him.
It's his loss, in and out, and 1,000 soldats in your pocket.
I don't clean up other people's messes.
My friend, that is precisely what you do. Please, don't make me beg. I'll throw in half of my end. It's another 300 in gold. Then you can take a nice long sabbatical.
Kane couldn't do it. Couldn't let down the man who had given him a chance as a young man on the run. A vagabond with no contacts or vouchers.
All right. I'll do it. But hang on to your fee. You're getting old, Matthias. You should think about retiring soon.
Matthias gathered his robe around him as he returned to his seat.
Oh, I don't know what I'd do with myself if I ever retired.
Buy a big villa somewhere nice. Live the life of a country gentleman.
Can you see me as a country squire? I wouldn't last a month. Good fortune, my friend. I'll see you when the job is done.
Kane tucked the papers into his tunic. The bundle made a lump under his arm opposite the money pouch.
By the way, what was the other job Rao took?
What? Something in Belastar. He'll be bow-legged and as dusty as a beggar by the time he returns.
Belastar? It'll be cold on the Midland coast this time of year.
Cold and bitter. The Blackheart should feel right at home, eh?
Kane thought back to the conversation on the stairs. Hadn't Rao mentioned a warmer clime? What game was he playing? As her carriage took her to Anastasia's house on Torvelli Square, Josie couldn't get the conversation with Father out of her head. She'd never felt so helpless in her life. The only thing she could think of was to talk to her best friend about it. Between the two of them, she was certain they would find a solution.
Good morning, Miss Frenig.
Good morning. Josie!
Anastasia hurried down a winding staircase. They clasped hands and kissed each other's cheeks. Anastasia stepped back to arm's length, concern written across her pretty features. With her honey gold hair, coiffed in wavy marcelles, her ocean blue eyes, Anastasia was a true beauty, doll-like in her perfection. Next to her, Josie had always felt homely, her complexion too pale, her hair too dark and stringy.
Oh, what's the matter, Josie? Oh, come in here.
Josie let herself be pulled into an adjoining parlor room and seated alone on a padded settee with tiny green leaves embroidered on the cushions.
Something's wrong, Josie. Tell me.
So Josie told Anastasia about her father's decision to make her leave. By the time she was finished, she was sobbing openly. Anastasia lent her a handkerchief to wipe her face.
That's simply not fair. Othar is as safe as a nursery. Forgive me, Josie, but I feel your father may be feeling his dotage. You know how old men get. They see specters in every dark corner.
I know. But no matter what I said, he refused to budge on the matter. I don't know what to do. That's why I came to see you. You have to help me, Stasia. I cannot miss your wedding. It will be the happiest day of my life.
Well, you have to be there.
I will be. I promise. But I need a plan.
father won't give in to emotional pleas.
Well, you could stay here with me. With the almsmen, we keep this house as virtually a fortress at night.
Oh, I'm not sure father would feel that's adequate. My safety has always been his chief concern. There were bodyguards everywhere when we lived in Navarre. Sometimes I could hardly breathe.
Oh, but the Westlands are abysmally lawless. This is Otha. It's entirely different.
I know. I just don't know how to convince father of that.
Don't worry, darling. We'll find a way.
Anastasia reached up and touched the pendant hanging from Josie's neck, an antique-style key in gold.
Oh, God, I've always admired this piece, Josie. It's beautiful. So simple, but elegant.
Father gave it to me for my 14th birthday. It's my favorite piece of jewelry.
It must be. You never wear anything else.
Father says it's the key to his heart, that it would give me everything I ever wanted and more. Sometimes he's the sweetest, kindest man in the world. I wish he would see reason and let me stay here until your wedding day.
It will work out, Josie. I know. We'll go to the Basilica and say a prayer for it.
Josie dabbed her face with a silken cloth.
I don't think praying is going to solve anything, Stasia. This is serious.
Then Josie saw the stricken look in her friend's eyes.
Forgive me. I'm just overwrought. Yes, let's go.
Pardon me, lady. A visitor has arrived for you.
Oh, well, let him in. That must be Marcus. He's been coming by every day since the engagement was announced. Oh, he is such a romantic. Do you like him, Josie? Tell me true.
Glad to speak of something else, Josie hugged her friend.
He's a dream come to life. You two will be as happy together as a pair of larks.
Oh, Marcus is nearly a knight, you know. Well, very nearly. Second prefect is a worthy rank, and soon he'll be promoted. I'm sure of it.
A tall shape filled the doorway.
Ah! Marcus!
Anastasia ran to him, and they embraced beside a bronze bust of one of her famous ancestors. Then, as if noticing Josie for the first time, the couple parted and came over to sit with her.
Oh, I adore this uniform on you, Marcus. It makes you look so handsome.
He smiled, revealing rows of large white teeth. He was starting to grow a mustache and sideburns in the military style.
What do you think, Josephine? Does it make me look dashing?
Josie dropped her gaze to the floor.
Yes, quite dashing.
Poor darling. Her father's sending her away, and we've been trying to concoct a scheme to keep her here.
Sending you away? Whatever for?
The note of real concern in his voice touched Josie.
He says it isn't safe here in the city anymore. He says people have been assaulted, even killed.
How horrible! Is it true, Marcus?
Oh, it's not for you to worry about. The Lowtowners are forever at each other's throats, like a pack of curs fighting over a bone. That's where most of the attacks have taken place.
Most? But not all?
Sometimes a matter spills over across the processional, but it's nothing to trouble you ladies. You're as safe as lambs in their pens.
Josie wasn't sure she liked his description, but she put on a smile for her friend.
I hope I can convince father of that.
I have a wonderful idea. Marcus could escort you home and tell your father just what he said to us. I'm sure it will comfort him coming from an officer of the Sacred Brotherhood.
Would you?
I'm sorry, but I cannot. I have business to attend to this afternoon. I just stopped by to remind Anna of our date for a late supper this evening.
I didn't forget. I'm having Maya make something special for us.
Excellent.
He bowed to Josie and gave Anastasia a peck on the cheek.
Mwah. I shall see you later.
Josie remained behind as Anastasia walked Marcus out. They whispered their goodbyes out of eyesight. Several minutes passed before Anastasia returned to the sitting room.
Oh, isn't he magnificent? I'm so happy, Josie. I feel like a cloud floating high above the world.
And I'm so happy for you.
The greater part of Josie's thoughts, however, were on her own problems. Her ship departed in 2 days. The matter couldn't wait until she devised an airtight argument. She had to speak with her father tonight. From the shadow of the Emperor Troniger Monument in the center of Torvelli Square, Ral watched the strapping officer of the guard and the young daughter of a respected statesman as they shared a deep kiss on the front steps of the manse. In broad daylight, The prefect's hand slid down to clutch his lady's slender bottom.
The wagging tongues of Hightown will wear themselves ragged.
Rell didn't understand the fascination with romance. Oh, he enjoyed the company of women aplenty, the sorts who were attracted to a man of means, and the girl was a pretty slip of a thing. But he didn't have time for anything that outlasted the night. Perhaps after his work was done, he would take the time to find a companion, someone suitable for an upcoming man with a bright future. Finally, Marcus bade the girl farewell. Ral followed him, keeping his distance. The prefect, in his scarlet coat, was simplicity itself to shadow through the broad streets of Opuline Hill. The sights and sounds of Hightown did not distract Ral. Growing up, he had sampled every type of excess that wealth could buy. His life might have turned out differently if his father had lived to a ripe old age, but fate had intervened in the form of news of an Arnassi trader bound for Ilmen. Both of his father's ships had disappeared in a storm off the Vekish coast, lost with all hands. In an instant, he went from a boy to a man of means. He sold his interest in the shipping company and bought a big house. He found new friends in the sons and daughters of the city's finest families, hosted lavish parties that went on for days, and lived the life he'd always wanted. Until the money ran out. Then the loan shark started circling. He borrowed to keep up his sumptuous lifestyle, and then again when that ran out. By the time he realized the depths to which he had sunk, it was too late. They found him dead drunk in the back room of a low-town dive. Five big men with cold eyes propped him on a rickety chair and lashed his hands behind his back. They gave him a simple choice: lose his skin, or do one small favor for his debtor in exchange for wiping the books clean. All he had to do was kill a man. That job changed him forever. The apprehension as he stole into another man's home in the dead of night, the tingling of his skin as he found his quarry abed, oblivious to the doom looming over him, the euphoria that surged through his veins when he drove the knife into that soft belly. His victim's death moan had been a paean of rebirth, setting him free from all the constraints that had been ingrained into him by a society blind to his needs, apathetic to his desires. That night he had stepped into a world where the power over life and death rested in his hands. He had never looked back. Ralph followed Marcus through the old forum with its afternoon strollers out for their constitutional amid the rows of vendor stalls. Marcus strode straight ahead like a charging bull, never glancing to his left or right. Complete obliviousness to the city's dangers, great or small. That was the prerogative of being an officer in the Sacred Brotherhood. Ralph followed him into the temple district. A few streets farther, Marcus entered the Pantheon, a converted pagan temple. While the prefect entered the stolid building through the front via a set of immense bronze doors, Ral went around to a side entrance located in a constricted alley. Avoiding piles of garbage, he wedged the tip of a dagger into the keyhole and snapped the simple lock. The door accessed a crowded storage room. Ral took a moment to rummage through a varnished wardrobe, selected a white cassock, and pulled the garment over his head. A red stole, stitched with circles and gold thread, went around his shoulders. Smiling, he slipped through another door. The Pantheon's circular walls bowed over the main worship chamber of the church. The building was an architectural masterpiece, dating back to imperial days when Nemea had enjoyed an era of magnificence unmatched by any nation in the world. The ceiling was open to the sky, another sign of its pagan origins. Prayer mats formed orderly rows on the floor's red and white checkerboard flagstones. Ral sank down beside Marcus, who knelt in the last row, his large hands folded in prayer. Marcus barely looked over.
No, thank you, Father. I'm... Ral? God's breath isn't anything sacred to you.
Ral glanced at the massive sculpture of the Prophet of the True Faith. Lord Phoebus, the Light of the World, towered above the high fane at the end of the nave. The statue was clothed as a simple peasant, but glittering rays chased in real gold radiated from his bloodied brow.
I'll worry about God when he starts worrying about me.
Someone could see you.
Ral had already checked during his approach. No other worshippers were in earshot.
Not likely. These bleaters are too busy worrying about saving their souls. With all this praying, you'd think there was an army of shadow men banging at the gates, or old King Mithrax riding from the grave with his hellion host.
What are you doing here?
Just making a last-minute visit. I take it you haven't heard the latest.
No, what?
Your grandmaster has been arrested.
On what charges?
Ral put his hands together as if to pray.
Treason, sedition, it doesn't matter. Our benefactor will make sure he never sees the light of day again.
I never thought that...
That's your problem, Marcus. You never do think. But now that the head of your order is out of the way is clear for new blood to rise to the top. Especially for those with allies on the Elector Council.
Ral let him ponder that idea for a moment.
Is everything in place?
Sure, the plan is simple. I'll get there a candle mark after sundown. The signal is...
How many men are you bringing?
I got a few boys on board, just like you told me. A couple of them owe me money. And another guy is bucking for a promotion so he can move out of his mother's house. They'll do what I say without question.
And afterward?
They'll keep their mouths shut.
They'd better. Our patron doesn't forgive mistakes. If one of these men talks...
I know what I'm doing.
Ral leaned into Marcus, hooking his right arm through the man's elbow. His left hand pressed into the prefect's side. The needle-sharp point of the stiletto held in his palm, pricking through both surcoat and mail to touch the flesh beneath.
Listen to me. You don't have to worry about the boss if you mess this up. I'll peel your worthless hide from your back myself. Do you understand me?
Marcus nodded. Ral released him. The stiletto vanished into his sleeve. Marcus clutched his side and stared at the floor with his lips compressed into a tight line. The prefect wasn't used to being manhandled, but he had to understand and fast. Both their lives hung in the balance if he messed up.
Get more men.
I'll need more money for that. God's soldiers don't come cheap.
Ral wanted to laugh, but he didn't let it touch his features. He reached under his cassock. Marcus stiffened, one hand dropping to the hilt of his sword, but he relaxed as Ral passed him a heavy pouch. Ral stood up and rested his hand on the prefect's beefy shoulder, the very picture of a pastor, counseling one of his flock.
Remember, Marcus, no mistakes, no loose ends.
Don't worry. We'll arrive just a moment too late to save them.
And their killer?
Sadly, he'll be killed, trying to elude capture.
Perfect.
A moment later, Ral was out the side door and down the alley, heading toward home. He had his own preparations to finalize. A horse was waiting for him at the West Gate, reserved by the offices of the Elector Council, with remounts at every roadhouse and garrison station between there and his target. Tomorrow night, the culmination of his dearest ambition would begin. He would rise higher than his departed father had ever dreamed. Soon, people would call him the most feared man in the city, and in the process, he would eliminate his only true rival to that title. Tomorrow night, Kame, Lowtown's favorite son, would die.